always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Folks, major breaking news on the Trump verdict out of the rotten apple. A New York Supreme Court has just notified, or the New York Supreme Court has just notified Judge Juan Merchan that someone identifying themselves as the cousin of one of the jurors posted to the court's Facebook page that Trump was going to be found guilty. This happened one day before the verdict was announced. We're working to verify all this information and what it means about Trump's case.
Well, one of the many, many, many things that is just rotten in the rotten apple about the Trump trial that was just recently concluded. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. We are here on a Friday, 101.9, 94.1 News Talk STL. If you missed our first hour, you missed a lot. We had a fantastic segment with Jim Gwinner, who is a very good friend of Chris and I's, who appears on our program from time to time, and every once in a while he sends us some fantastic guests as well. He was the fantastic guest today with a personal firsthand experience of a recently concluded trip to Israel. If you missed that, please pull down the podcast. It was a fantastic discussion. And Chris, I was hoping that listener Tanya was around today. She was listening, and she put a little comment in there to us. Tanya says on our Facebook stream, Shabbat Shalom, and thank you for this great interview in studio with Jim Gwinner. It was very informative. Well, Tanya, I very glad you were able to tune in today. And for all of us who are our listeners of the Jewish persuasion or not, we hope that you enjoyed that and shed a little light on what's actually going on in a country that is literally beset by war.
Because there is a lot of propaganda going on, Tim, against Israel around the world and here in this country. And sometimes you just need to hear things from the horse's mouth. Someone who has a bird's eye view that has been on the ground that can tell you what is truly happening.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of from the horse's mouth, Tanya had a follow-up comment, Chris, about another animal. What is Jill Biden, a mule? Hunter hates her. Something's very, very off about all her flight patterns.
She was his babysitter, right?
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Yeah, we don't really know. As Chris was talking about in the last segment for our 5 o'clock news break there, it is bizarre with her jetting back and forth across the ocean. Who's paying for all of that?
I wonder.
You and me and everybody in our audience. We have a great couple segments for you before we hand you off to Larry Connors USA. We will have the speaker stump speech in a minute. I'm going to talk about the layers of reversible error. I heard about that a lot today in a Republican lawyer's national webinar that I listened to that was actually featuring, just by coincidence, Zach Smith of the Heritage Foundation and another attorney. And they talked about the different problems. And I left that webinar, Chris, more confused than when I started it. And they kind of said that was the point,
right?
Because the whole trial was more of a manufactured show trial than a pursuit of truth. And when you listen to two litigators explain the layers of potential reversible error, it makes you wonder how in the world an appellate court is not going to throw this conviction out, which makes you go back to the point that many have made. The left brag, the Democrats, they didn't care. They just wanted a tagline they could use till November, and then they could give a rip if the conviction gets reversed or not. They needed a campaign stunt.
And, you know, non-lawyers like us, learned a lot during the whole Fannie Willis episode where they were trying to get her removed as the prosecutor. And one of the things that I learned, and it doesn't have to be a conflict of interest or a direct conflict of interest, but if it is the appearance, even the appearance of a conflict of interest where the public may think that justice was skewed, a person has to recuse them from the case. And with the judge giving money to Joe Biden and Democrats and his daughter working on a website that makes millions of dollars off of Donald Trump, Tim, I never set foot one day in a law school class, but to me, this just seems like a obvious conflict of interest. Yes. And just for the good of the case and justice, this judge should have recused himself.
Yes, Chris, normal Americans, Joe and Jane American, they would call that not passing the smell test. The lawyers use the fancy terminology that you were referring to called the appearance of impropriety. And when you have the judge physically giving his own money and his daughter, she wasn't just like, she wasn't like somebody, hey, can you get a few bucks together for the Biden campaign? No, she's a professional multi-million-dollar bundler for the Democratic Party. Oh, I'm sure there's nothing to see here. Mm-hmm. If the shoe was on the other foot, CNN and MSNBC would be screaming from the rooftops, just like they were screaming from the rooftops last night. We were talking about Joy Reid.
Chris, Joy. She was the aptly named Joy Reid.
Joyless Reid. Joyless Reid last night. Chris, I was sitting in the, we were sitting in the hotel bar in Indianapolis, and I was talking to a really great guy, really representative, from Kansas. He's the only black elected Republican official right now on the state level in Kansas.
What's his name? Probably connected with him somewhere.
I'm going to have to look him up. I'm having a mind. He's a retired Army captain.
Okay.
And he's got four kids and a beautiful wife, and he is a state representative in Wichita, Kansas. And I'm going to look him up in just a second. Penn. Okay. Penn. Representative Penn.
Okay.
P-E-N-N.
What's his last? You know, his first name?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I'll have to look him up. I'll find him in 2 seconds. All right. He was talking to me, and I had my back to the television, and he goes, "Holy Toledo, look at that." We turned around. Joy Reid, Chris, was losing her mind once again about Justice Clarence Thomas. Yeah. They hate him MSNBC.
They hate him. If you remember a long time ago, a few years back, Mal Vo, she was a correspondent with CNN for a long time. She made the statement, famous statement, that she hopes that Clarence Thomas's wife feed him plenty of eggs and high cholesterol food so that he can clog, so his arteries can get clogged, so we can have a heart attack. She actually said that.
Hateful.
At one time.
Hateful, you hear people.
Joy Reid and her things that she says about Donald Trump, about Clarence Thomas. And it all comes down to mainly the basic bottom line is that these people get offended if you have a different view than they do. And I think they take it personally, Tim, as if you feel that you are better than them. You know, I think it's, hey, 95% of us believe this way. How you're in the small majority. How can you think that you know more than what we do when there's a majority of us believe this way? And they get insulted by that. I think that's where a lot of the animosity stems from the black left towards the black right.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. His name is Representative Patrick Penn. Patrick Penn from the great city of Wichita. He's in the state house in Kansas. Chris, he's a great guy. He was raised as a foster child. He was then raised by his aunt and uncle. He went into the Army. He became a combat veteran. He retired at the rank of captain. And then he ran for the state house in Kansas. He's a really good dude. I told him we need to have him on the radio here someday in St. Louis. And he said he'd love to come on with us.
We'd love to have him.
Yeah. So we're then going to speak with Samuel Green, president and general counsel at Reason for Life, a national organization. We thought it would be appropriate to have somebody on here in the month of the second year anniversary of the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. So that'll be at 5:25. We'll then hand you off to Larry Connors at 6:05. Chris will have some teasers on that at the 5:45 segment. And producer Joey V is here as well. How you doing, Joey? How you
doing? Doing wonderful. Glad to be noticed. Thank you.
I think that's the first time you've spoken all day, isn't it?
I made fun of you because you couldn't figure out how to wash your hands.
That's right.
So I'm glad you blocked that out.
That's right.
It was quite traumatic.
Joey, you're going to the air show this weekend, right?
You know, maybe. I have a loved one who works out in Chesterfield. So what they do is they barricade the parking lot and make sure no losers get in there. And they just look up and, yeah, they're right next to the Spirit of St. Louis Airport. Is that what it's called?
Spirit of St. Louis
Airport, yeah.
I've been up to one of those, and I worked for the election board. Mm-hmm. They all gave us free tickets to go out there. And that was my first one. It was very, very enjoyable. It was hot as Hades that day, but it was very enjoyable watching the Blue Angels and just seeing the St. Louis County Fair. Was fun.
At the St. Louis Science Center, they have, a decommissioned Blue Angel aircraft right there on site. So what we can do is we can fake a wonderful shot of you maybe on top of the airplane holding on to the wing with your cheeks blowing back. We'll just say you went up.
Now, I have had a secondhand experience. My wife and I honeymooned in Pensacola, Florida.
Oh, wonderful.
And we watched a show down at their headquarters. It was cold. It was October 22nd. It's cold in Florida. I thought Florida was like 90 degrees wherever. If, you know, Pensacola is not there. And it was exciting seeing that. I learned with that that they go just below the speed of sound because they don't want to do the sonic booms because it freaks people out.
Mm-hmm.
But they drove past us at 499 miles an hour.
Not quite blowing open the cloud envelope. Yeah, hear them over the cicadas. Yes, over the those freaking cicadas.
Exactly.
I'm glad they're almost done.
Oh.
Hey, before we get the speaker stump speech, just in case she happens to be listening, or if she's not, somebody will tell her I was nice this afternoon to her on the radio show. I want to wish my wonderful wife, Suzanne, a very happy anniversary. Yeah. Our anniversary is tomorrow, June the 8th.
How many years?
22 years.
22 years.
Yeah. I have no idea how two decades have passed us by. But
two decades and two children.
Yeah, that's right. Two decades, two kids, bunch of different career changes, and we're still chugging. And couldn't thank Suzanne for her patience, number one, and I should say her love, number one, and her patience, number two. She's a wonderful human being. She's a great woman. She's a wonderful wife. She's a fantastic mom. I mean, best mom I could have. I mean, just much better parent than I am. And I can't thank Suzanne enough for over two decades of just fantasticness.
So, excellent.
Very good. Nice. All right. How about we get next to something that wasn't very fantastic at all, and that was the Trump trial. Jonathan Turley writing, Bragg's thrill kill in Manhattan. I like that. Could prove short-lived on appeal. I couldn't agree more. That's the subject of today's Speaker Stump speech.
Listen to me.
I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius.
It's time for the Speaker Stump Speech, sponsored by Hanson's Tree Service at hansonstree.com.
The conviction of Donald Trump in New York City under Alvin Bragg, who would rather persecute former presidents for things that probably should have been prohibited by the statute of limitations to begin with, instead of actually prosecuting real crime in New York City. One of the things that Zach Smith mentioned on this webinar today, listen to, he said, you realize that while Alvin Bragg is prosecuting Donald Trump, like taking these misdemeanors and escalating up to felonies, Bragg is likewise taking felonies that people probably have actually committed, and he's reducing them to misdemeanors or he's dismissing them. So I think that's a point that we've probably forgotten about or not highlighted as much. New York City has a crime problem right now, and it has a crime problem because it has a prosecutor that doesn't want to actually prosecute real crime. So not only was this Trump trial a complete witch hunt and a persecution, but Bragg's not doing the job he was actually elected to do, and that's to prosecute actual crime that has actual victims by which people are actually suffering. So that's probably the first point to make. It's a humanitarian issue. Humanitarianism was something the Democrats used to care about. Now it's just all power plays with them. When I listened to this webinar that was featuring Zach Smith and another great lawyer from the Republican Lawyers Association, I became more confused than ever as to what in the world Bragg was trying to prove. I don't think Bragg knows what was proven or not proven at this trial, because here's how they re-explained it. Okay, so you got this set of misdemeanors, this set of business misdemeanors, which has never been utilized that anyone can remember ever before in the history of the state or the city of New York, right? So first of all, you dusted off the books and were like, oh yeah, let's pursue e-misdemeanors against Donald Trump that, by the way, actually had lapsed because of the statute of limitations. Now, we're going to fix the statute of limitations problem because we're going to bootstrap them onto some unknown, unnamed, heretofore not described felony that we're going to kind of make up. And that allows us to get past the statute of limitations problem, because then we can still be within the same 5-year period. And we'll worry about exactly what that underlying felony was later on in the trial. Folks, not only did they wait till later on in the trial, they pretty much waited until the closing arguments of the trial, when the prosecutors began to explain how the misdemeanors were elevated to a felony because Donald Trump allegedly committed the misdemeanor crimes in furtherance of another crime. That was the language used, and I believe that's the language that's deployed in the jury instructions. In furtherance of another crime. Now, you're saying to me, especially if you're a liberal, okay, well, he proved the furtherance of another crime, right? We don't know. The jury verdict form came back only with the check marks next to the business misdemeanors, the falsification of business records. The underlying crime was never noted or annotated by the jury. What the judge did, which is how many lawyers have described it, was basically to provide them a buffet or a smorgasbord of three different things that they could choose in furtherance of a further falsification of business records. That was choice number one. In furtherance of a of an attempt to avoid tax consequences, to do an improper tax filing. And number three, the one that they think they actually settled on, in furtherance of a campaign violation. So that was the predicate. That's the legal term. They call it the two misdemeanors in furtherance of another crime. It had to be predicated on something. So the predicate that most people believe but are not sure that the jury chose was the in furtherance of an election a matter. Okay, so the election law was a New York statute, which by itself could not exist in a vacuum. It had to be predicated on a violation of a federal election law violation. Are you sort of following me at this point? You take the two misdemeanors, you bootstrap them onto a New York State election law violation, but that election law violation has to then refer to a federal elections law violation. A predicate on top of a predicate, bootstrapped to two misdemeanors. Well, surely, Tim, this was mentioned in the jury's decision. Again, it was not. The jury, all they did when they filled out the jury verdict form was put guilty next to the misdemeanor violations and they moved on. Chris mentioned some reversible error in our last segment, or maybe it was the beginning of this one. The problems with Judge Mershon and the fact that he has the appearance of impropriety in giving to a political figure, which judges are prohibited from doing in New York. That's violation number two. The daughter's appearance of impropriety by being a multi-million-dollar bundler. That's number two. The venue. The Trump's lawyers argued they should not have had that venue in Manhattan. That's number three. And then you get to these jury instructions. I gave you one of the major cases of reversible error. There were other situations as well. The Trump defense team was not allowed to put on the expert witnesses they wanted to. They were not allowed to argue things certain ways. Trump was issued a gag order. All these things that were heaped upon this defense and this defendant that I've never seen before in any criminal trial heretofore. Finally, once a defendant is convicted of a crime, you would think in our constitutional system where we have the Fourth and the Sixth Amendment, where you have to know the charges against you and that you have a right to face your witnesses, that at the end of that trial, you would know exactly what you were convicted of. If Hunter Biden gets convicted in this gun trial involving drug use, we will know exactly what crime he was convicted of. He was possessing a firearm unlawfully because he was in possession of and in usage of drugs. Pretty easy to understand, pretty easy to explain. In the Trump case, we know that the jury went ahead and decided he was guilty of the misdemeanors, but in order to convict him of the felony, which they did, we need to know on what that was predicated. We are still, 1 week later, making guesses that it was possibly in conjunction with a New York State election law felony that was predicated on a federal election law violation that the FEC itself and the Department of Justice declined to prosecute. Layers of reversible error? More likely than not, but will it matter ultimately to anyone? Because wasn't this just a campaign stunt from the beginning to the end? And that's the speaker stump speech for today.
Tim, I want to ask you this. I know we're running a little long. Sure. We've got to guess, but I want to ask your legal opinion on this. The liberal legal scholars are justifying Bragg's charges as this. They're comparing it to, if you are going to commit a burglary, that's a crime. But you're also, if you're committing a burglary, breaking into someone's house, you're probably going to steal their stereo or some other valuables. That is the furtherance of another crime. I think that whole idea falls apart on what we're talking about. You can't have a state or a city prosecutor prosecuting a federal charge. You can't do that. But talk about that talking point that they use. It's the equivalent of a robber breaking into a house, committing two crimes, one the breaking in, the other crime, they're going to steal stuff.
If Merchant had only given the jury one option, so was the falsification done in furtherance of the election law violation, they might have an argument, but he gave them three choices. Violation of a federal elections law, violation of the IRS tax code, or a further falsification of business records. By giving them that choice, Chris, and us not knowing what the jury decided that upon, I think that's a constitutional violation.
Got it.
Of someone's right to know what exactly they're being charged with and convicted of.
Got it.
So, yeah, great point indeed. And that is something, Chris, they will discuss that on appeal. Mm-hmm. And we'll be discussing this further.
Yeah, we will.
All right, we got to get to our second guest of the afternoon. He's Samuel Green. We're going to talk about Dobbs 2 years later. Can you believe it's been 2 years? And the impact on the 2024 election. Chris and I will have that very interesting discussion next on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, 101.9 941 Newstalk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
The battle over abortion rights is again heating up on Capitol Hill. Democrats are marking 2 years since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, resulting in abortion bans in 14 states. Since then, the White House has been coordinating with lawmakers who are trying to expand and protect abortion access. On Tuesday, the Senate Health Committee held a special hearing to examine the financial and psychological burdens of women living in states where those bans are in effect. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer going a step further and introducing the Right to Contraception Act and hinting more legislation could be coming as the 2024 election ramps up.
Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Sharp Show. We're going to discuss that very issue. It's going to be part and parcel of election 2024 because the Democrats pretty much have nothing else to run on. Let's talk to our next guest about that and lots more. His name is Samuel D. Green. Samuel Green, he's the president and general counsel at Reason for Life. You can find them at reasonforlife.org. And Samuel is on Twitter X at ProLife. Samuel, good afternoon. Thanks for joining Chris and I today.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So, Samuel, I want to you have a really interesting post that you put up 1 year ago that says a year after Roe v. Wade's fall, many pastors remain silent about the evil of abortion, even as confused churchgoers choose, quote, death for children who are fearfully and wonderfully made by God. This must change. Samuel, we're now 2 years post hence. Are your thoughts kind of the same, or what do you think now in retrospect 2 years out from the Dobbs decision?
Well, sadly, the problem is the same. You know, with so many Christians and pro-life individuals were working and praying for decades to see the fall of Roe versus Wade, and we gave thanks to God when we saw the Dobbs decision overturn Roe versus Wade 2 years ago. But that decision didn't end abortion. It just put it back in the hands of the people. And sadly, what we've seen is that every single time abortion has gone directly to the people on a ballot measure, they have chosen death for unborn children rather than choosing life. And what we've seen from a lot of research is that churchgoers, sadly, are part of the problem. Significant portions of churchgoers believe that abortion is morally acceptable, are voting for abortion, and many pastors are silent. So there are people in the pews every Sunday hearing the culture's lies about abortion and then never hearing the truth from their pastor. So they're deceived and becoming complicit in having hands that shed innocent blood, the blood of these precious, innocent children.
Samuel, prior to Roe v. Wade being overturned, the position of the pro-life movement, of course, was that this should be a decision that the states should make individually. We have had that. But now we have senators like Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and Larry Hogan, former governor of Maryland, who is running for senator in Maryland, saying that he supports federal legislation to codify Roe v. Wade. What is the correct position?
You know, I think there's been some confusion on that front. So as people were speaking against Roe versus Wade. That was obviously the judicial invention of a so-called constitutional right to abortion. So I think some people were using this terminology about states' rights because the Supreme Court had come in, invented this fake right to abortion, and imposed abortion on the states. But if you look at the Dobbs decision, it leaves open room for state action and congressional action in simply saying that the people and their elected representatives will now be able to decide on the issue of abortion. And we know that the left is continuing to try to use Congress to push for abortion. You know, they have the so-called Women's Health Protection Act that they have been pushing in Congress to try to essentially reinstitute Roe versus Wade and even make things worse than Roe versus Wade as a matter of federal legislation. And so I think we can't ignore the fact that this is going to remain an issue at both the congressional level and at the state level.
Samuel, it seems that those on the right, those who are the most ardent pro-life legislators and their allies, I feel like we're always on defense on this because in general, it seems like people don't know how to address the situation. Shouldn't we be turning the tables on the left on this? Because those on the right, I mean, I don't know how you become more pro-life. You're like, you're pro-life or you're not. So you're against abortion. But those on the left, Samuel, they're the ones who have gone more extreme, right? Because back in the day, Democrats used to repeat the mantra of President Bill Clinton. You know, abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. And now their mantra seems to be abortion on demand anytime, anywhere. Doesn't matter if the child is 1 second old or, you know, about to be on the operating table, like the former Governor Ralph Northam from Virginia horrifically described. So we kind of need to turn the tables on the left on this discussion, don't we?
Well, I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, so many pro-life individuals and politicians are feel like this is such a divisive issue. And so they kind of hide in a corner and are afraid to speak out. But the reality is that science and morality are on the pro-life side. And we need to point out how extreme the other side is. You know, right now in Missouri, there's a push to add a right to abortion to the Missouri state constitution that will allow abortion all the way up until the moment of birth. Mm-hmm. So we are talking about, you know, children who have, their heart has beat for millions of times. They have fingers and toes and can hiccup and yawn and stretch. And we are talking about literally tearing their arms and legs off, letting them bleed to death if we don't crush their skull first in these abortion procedures. Mm. And that's what the left is supporting. That is what this effort to change the Missouri Constitution would accomplish if it passes. And that's horrific. It's barbaric. And even many who consider themselves pro-choice understandably have reservations when they hear about that type of barbarity that is being pushed against these innocent children, some of whom can suffer the pain of their own dismemberment. And so it's absolutely tragic what's being pushed, and we need to put that truth out to others so that they can understand just how extreme this pro-abortion agenda really is.
Speaking with Samuel Green, President and General Counsel at Reason for Life. Samuel, we talked about this earlier in the show, how the left has been very successful at desensitizing the public to what abortion really is. They, you know, they've made it successfully to people that it's just a clump of cells, it's not a baby, it's not life. So it's very hard at that stature, at that state, to legislate basically morality in a sense. I think the fight has to be legislation, but also changing hearts and minds. How do we go about doing that, changing the hearts and minds of people to see abortion for what it really is?
It's a challenge, but it's a fight that definitely needs to be undertaken. And just having the conversations with our friends and neighbors, coworkers and classmates, and conversations in person and on social media to help people understand just how incredible the development of children in the womb is. It's beautiful. It's complex. The, you know, heart starts beating on that unborn child before many women even know that they're pregnant. At the very moment of conception, the new DNA of this unique human being has been established, which determines the child's sex and hair color and bone structure, all there at conception. And then there's just a matter of growth. And every time in society, we've taken what we know to be a human biologically and then tried to say, well, there's some groups of humans that we're going to treat as less than, that we're going to be able to deny their rights. We've seen tragedy after tragedy. And right now, that's what we are seeing when it comes to unborn children. And so we need to help people understand that. We need to help them understand how barbaric abortion is. And, you know, for those who belong to churches, they need to go and respectfully ask their pastors to preach the truth on this topic. I think a lot of people assume at their own peril that if someone's a churchgoer, then they are pro-life. But the studies simply do not bear that out. And we know because pastors are being silent on these issues, the pro-abortion lobby is actually trying to target churchgoers specifically, misusing Bible verses and religious terminology to try to make them comfortable with supporting abortion. So I mentioned that abortion's been on the ballot in multiple states. Ohio was the last state to see one of these abortion ballot measures, and sadly, they passed it this last November. But there was a video ad running in Ohio featuring a so-called pastor reading the Bible, and you know it shows his finger running over the text of the scripture, and then he uses that to try to argue for this abortion ballot measure.
Wow.
So people in church are being misled, and exit polling from Ohio suggested that it would not have passed without the support of professing Christians. Sadly, there were enough professing Christians who voted for abortion through all 9 months that it passed in Ohio, and Missouri faces the same risk this year.
Yeah, Samuel, voters need to know the truth about these ballot initiatives, because I know the left has no problem lying to them about them. Samuel D. Green, our guest here this afternoon, President General Counsel at Reason for Life. Samuel, I came across an article that you had published recently, Pastors and the Moral Issue of Our Age. The subtitle here, probably something that makes the left completely lose their minds. If you say you would have preached against slavery, you must preach against abortion. Samuel, what was the argument you were making there in that piece?
So that was an argument to pastors who, again, today are sadly very reluctant to preach about abortion. You know, thankfully there are champions for life, but many others who are scared and they consider it to be a political issue. And so I was pointing out to these pastors, you know, if you had been a pastor in the 1800s and there was going to be a vote on slavery and you knew that some in your congregation were going to support this because they didn't know the Bible's truths about how we're all created in the image of God, regardless of skin color, and precious in the sight of God, if you knew they were going to become complicit in the sin of slavery, wouldn't you preach a sermon to share the truth? And I think today it's easy for a lot of pastors to say, well, of course I would. But then I challenged them and said, on the issue of our day, which has at least as much scriptural clarity and implications for the human rights of our brethren, why will you not preach today? Because your congregation is going to have to determine whether they're going to become complicit in the evil of abortion, in the evil of killing innocent people or not. And they need you as their shepherd to preach the truth and make sure that they don't travel down this road. And so that's what I was trying to get across. And Reason for Life even has a written sample sermon for pastors in Missouri on our website for free, just to make it easier for pastors to lay this out and help pastors see this is first and foremost a biblical issue. Yes, it's in the political arena, but these are children made in the image of God, by God, and the Bible is very clear about their value and humanity and the duty of Christians to protect and love them as their neighbors.
Samuel, I've asked several men this question who are involved in the pro-life movement. What do you say to pro-choice women who say that abortion is a women's health issue, that men have nothing to do with this, and that you and I and Tim and the rest of the men, we need to just stay in our own lanes? What do you say to those women?
well, we could probably take up your whole show with a few things. You know, one is that a human being, when they see another human being being killed or harmed, should act to save that person. They should speak out against human rights abuses, even if they are not individually impacted. And I mean, just to go to another slavery analogy, you know, we wanted everyone to stand up against slavery when it was still a contested issue. And it would have been wrong to say, well, you're not a plantation owner. You don't know how hard it will be to harvest cotton without the help of free labor. So who are you to speak to this? No, they had an obligation. Everyone did, to speak to this issue and stand up for the rights of those with black skin. And now we have a subset of the human population who can't speak at all. And every person, male and female, old and young, should be speaking for them and speaking out against this human rights abuse. I'll also mention that the issue of abortion does directly impact males because, for instance, if this measure in Missouri passes, there could be a married couple that have been planning to have children together. They can... you know, the wife can be pregnant, they can post on Facebook the ultrasound image, they can do their gender reveal, they can be all excited, and at 8 months, the wife can decide, you know what, I don't think I'm ready to be a mother. Mm. And she can kill her child, and her husband has no legal ability to protect her child. So this, you know, can impact men directly, but again, that's not a reason to speak out or not. Simply the fact that we're humans, we should be speaking out against human rights abuses.
Amen, brother.
Mm-hmm. Excellent discussion. That's the kind of discussions we should be having about this issue versus the political epithets that get thrown around. Folks, if you want to check out more of what Samuel Green is doing and working on and speaking out on this issue, you can follow him at Pro-Life Samuel on Twitter X, and definitely go visit Reason for Life, F-O-R, reasonforlife.org. Samuel, it was great having you. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely, indeed. There's a guy who knows his stuff on that issue.
He does know his stuff.
It'd be nice if we all talked about it that way. It's hard. It's hard, though. You know?
It is. And, you know, I asked these gentlemen these questions that are involved in the pro-life situation to arm myself when that is brought to me and others, too. Because, you know, that's a trope that they throw out that, hey, you're a man. You don't know anything about this, even though it takes two people to create a baby. But you should have some say in if that child lives or not. But according to the woman, that's her body. Her choice, and we need ammunition to counter that argument because with some, it's effective.
Yes, absolutely, indeed. Ultimately, you know, the state should have an interest in protecting life, or the state will cease to exist, and none of us will be here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, that was a proper discussion on a very weighty topic, and if you just tuned in and missed it or missed any of the show, we had Jim Gwinner on earlier talking about his visit to Israel. We just talked to Samuel Green about the two-year anniversary of the Dobbs decision. Our podcasts are available wherever you can find podcasts. You should podcast our show every day. Listen to it. It's fantastic.
Do
indeed.
It.
And you can listen to all the shows, including the weekend shows, yes, which are kicking off tomorrow morning with Dr. Randy Tolber at 6 a.m. We got one segment left, Chris, not only for the show, but for the entire week. How about them, Apples?
One segment left, and we'll talk about again how Joe Biden is increasing the global footprint. She could be increasing the hurricane season this year. We'll talk about that.
We're going to blame them for that.
Yes.
And Chris will tell you everything that's coming up on Larry Connors USA at 6:05. Stay right here. Lots more of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. Straight ahead, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
You heard about my ex-boyfriend, right, 50 Cent, and his support of Donald Trump.
Yeah, what's going on between you? I saw your tweets, and I go, wait, what's happening?
He says he doesn't want to pay 62% of taxes, which, by the way, isn't a plan of Joe Biden's. That's a lie. So he doesn't want to pay 62% of taxes because he doesn't want to go from being 50 Cent to 20 Cent. And I had to remind him that he was a black person, so he can't vote for Donald Trump, and that he shouldn't be influencing an entire swath of people who may listen to him because he's worried about his own personal pocketbook. I am willing to, you know, seal the deal in more ways than one if he changes his mind and publicly denounces Donald Trump.
5:50 on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show. Tim, let's dissect that for a minute. And is my mind going in the right place when she said she's willing to seal the deal if he will not vote for Donald Trump? Am I thinking the right? I know, you know, there's kids in the car and, you know, this is a family show, but Was that where she was going?
I guess so. And my response to her would be racist much? I mean, was that one of the most racist things in the middle part where she's like, you ain't black? Yeah, and I'm like, what?
It's almost, you can hear Joe Biden in the background saying, you ain't black. Boy, wow. I tell you.
So he's not allowed to think for himself, I guess.
I guess not. That's embarrassing. Boy,
you're not
I tell
a Chelsea
you.
Handler fan?
I'm not a Chelsea
not
Handler
anymore.
Fan. I can just hear all the black women that have heard that tape. It's like, that's what you get messing with that white woman. See how she owned you. Should have stuck with the sisters. I know the sisters, if they hear that, are dogging him out to the nth degree. You know, we talked about Jill Biden. Somebody, who is that I saw, calls her Jilly Bean Biden. Somebody, I've heard them say that.
Yeah, I have too.
But you know, Jilly Bean has been in the...
Katie calls her Jilly Bean.
I like that. You know, Jilly Bean is doing a huge carbon footprint. Mm-hmm. She had been in the trial with Hunter Biden, and she flew over to France, and then she's come back for this trial, then she's flying back over there again. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she's also going to have to fly back. I wish I would have done this, did the research, and see just what is the carbon footprint for Air Force One every hour. I'm sure it's an 8 or 9 trip over to France, and just really add that up to see how much are they damaging the environment. You know, Tim, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, NOAA, they're forecasting this hurricane season will bring a 85% odds of an above normal season. I wonder if Jilly Bean there has something to do with that.
I'm gonna blame her.
17 of 25 named storms of tropical storm of intensity or greater. That's what they're predicting. 8 or 13 are projected to become hurricanes, and 4 to 7 major hurricanes of category 3 or under. The numbers are well above the 1991-2020 average of 14 named storms, 7 hurricanes, and 3 major hurricanes each season. More news, Tim. It sounds like a disaster movie here. May was the 12th consecutive month to set a global average temperature record. The new data comes amid a slew of findings from climate monitoring groups released today. But they actually have a little truth in journalism here, Tim. They say this is not the longest stretch on record of warmest months, which stands at 15. However, it is the longest streak to reach or exceed the Paris Agreement's aspirational target of limiting global warming to as low as 1.5 degrees Celsius compared to pre-industrial levels. So since the Paris Agreement, the climate, the planet has been rising just incredibly.
You know what I saw, though, the other day? You mentioned the May stat. I saw a stat the other day, and you have to dig for this because, of course, it's not anywhere on CNN or MSNBC. Understanding what you said about the global temperature, I saw a stat the other day that said May in the Midwest, the month we just concluded, was the coolest May in the Midwest since the 1980s.
I said that. I've been telling Becky the last couple of weeks. I said, I think on this show, I'm like, where is summer? It's the end of May, the end of June. It is cool outside. And I tell you, too, this has been one of the rainiest Mays on record.
So what
as
do
well.
We do with that? Chris, we had plenty of rain and it was nice and cool. So what do we do with that?
Because there is a tent over the earth of global warming. That's keeping all the heat and everything. And that's creating a
cooling effect.
It's a cooling effect. Yes. It's kind of like a... what do you call that? Where the water, the jungles.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about.
You get the cooling effect with the condensation.
Exactly. That's where I'm trying to go there.
So when it's cool and rainy, that's also global warming.
Exactly. You can all pin it on anything.
Of course.
You know, if it's too hot, global warming. If it's too cold, global warming.
We can make stuff up too.
Not enough snow is global warming. Right. Too much snow, global warming. So it's all the same. Did you guys know that on 2011, on a trip to Australia's tropical north, that Barack Obama was given crocodile insurance by Australia's Chief Minister Paul Henderson? The insurance would have paid out $50,000 to Michelle Obama if the president had been attacked by a crocodile. Now, what does that tell you as a foreign leader?
I've ever heard.
When a foreign leader buys crocodile insurance for you, is that tell you something. It's almost like, should you have a food taster with you like they do back in the...
Joey's going to buy that on his trip to the Ozarks this year.
Back in the old days. Hey, Tim, here's a really big thing. You know, you are a reader. You are Russian studies major, English major. So you do a lot of reading, spend a lot of time in bookstores. I did, too. I live right by Jamestown Mall, Walden Books, and there was another bookstore were my favorite. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you don't see many bookstores anymore. No. They're all online now. But do you know that more than 200 new independent bookstores opened in 2023?
That's a good thing.
Membership in the American Booksellers Association, which has been declining for years, now stands at 2,400, nearly double what it was in 2016. Around 190 more stores are in the process of opening over the next 2 years. So let's dissect this. You know, you were like, boy, mall stores, those are gone. We're never going to see that anymore. You just buy your books on Amazon online, or you can get it physical. Mm-hmm. What do you think is causing this resurgence of bookstores? Is that bookstore experience that people just miss?
I think it's the younger generations who are starting to rebel against all this kind of wokeness and secularism and all this. Like my daughters are both big lovers of books. They mm-hmm. love books. They love to hold books. They love to touch them. They're not into the Kindle thing as much, you know, for traveling. Yeah. But I think it's the younger generations who are starting to pull. They want kind of that sense of nostalgia and they don't want to lose all the history. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's the younger generations driving it. Something
is. Is this just me or is the other folks? Whenever I go to a library or bookstore, I get this sudden urge to have to use the restroom. Does that happen? I swear to God, does that happen to you?
It's all that knowledge washing over you.
I guess, Joy, do you have to use the restroom whenever you go to a library or restroom?
No, are you taking magazines in there with you too?
I am not. On that note, let's talk about what's coming up on Larry Connors USA up next. Larry's going to talk about polls show the Democrats are losing the white male vote. Is Israel preparing to attack terrorists inside Lebanon? And could Hunter Biden jury go rogue? Larry will talk about all that on the show next. You've been listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. Have a great weekend and drive safe.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.